band, I do feel really fortunate because the band is self-sufficient. I try very hard to not do anything that the band doesn't financially support on its own. And so I think that even just that is a really good place to be, where I can afford to, you know, compensate all my bandmates and the people that go on the road with us and, you know, do all the things that we want to do, you know, as a self-sufficient entity for sure. But then I don't necessarily focus on paying all of my other bills that way.
That becomes a problem at some point. I don't know if you're there yet, but at some point that will come back to haunt you, I think.
Yeah.
I was going to ask previously whether, you know, being in a band with musicians who are in these, like, you know, big name mm-hmm. bands, whether that makes things difficult. But I suppose there's another upside to it, is that, like, they don't have to rely on this specifically for their income.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, I think it's more that I'm fortunate to work with people, or I've been working with people who are in other projects. Like, I've been the only person in Warriors who is, like, just doing Warriors. And so regardless of, like, the level of the other bands that they're in, or like the activity that people have in other bands, it's always been much more about the collaboration for this particular project or for one particular tour, or working on an album together, and not as much, well, we're all in the band together and depend on that for not just income, but, you know, creative fulfillment and, you know, just like general creative commitment. I don't expect anybody in the band to just be doing Warriors 100%. Although our guitarist Frank comes pretty close. He's pretty great. But you know, everybody else kind of comes in and out, and I don't you know, I don't expect people to be, like, clearing their schedule forever for Warriors. So
is there an extent, though, to which you do have to kind of work around their schedules?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, for recording, yes, because obviously the people that I'm writing with and recording with, like, there is some of that, you know, people are only available so much of the time. But for touring, it's always been set up where, you know, if somebody can come on the tour, great. You know, like, there's always kind of the first round folks that I ask first, but then if they can't, then we just find somebody else. And you know, it's definitely not like disposable in any way, but they're generally cool with that, and that's how we're able to tour all the time. You know, like, if I think it would be a lot more difficult if I had been committed to a singular lineup this whole time.
Think about Franz especially. As I'm sure you are, I'm a big Hold Steady fan, and I like pretty much all their stuff, but man, like, those albums that he's on, it's like, you know what I mean, like, that stuff that he wasn't on, you know, it was all, I liked it all, but, like, Boys and Girls in America, there's something that he brings to a record that you just, you can't duplicate.
No, I mean, and that's the thing, it's like, I feel very thankful to have just, like, known him for a long time and to finally be able to work with him, and he contributed so much to the last record and has played some shows with us. I'm hoping he'll play more shows with us. You know, we have some backing tracks at shows when he's not around so that we can still have the piano parts. Yeah, so it's all there. Because that's the thing, it's like, it's not just something that you can omit from the song and have it still sound like the song, you know, it's like we can't play some of those songs unless there's keys, or, like, I don't want to. So we find a way to make it happen.
Is it just that it's, like, difficult to find another keyboard player for live shows, or is it just that nobody can do exactly what he does for the band?
It's probably a little bit of both. He's definitely, I mean, That style of playing is not something that everybody can do. And in my mind, it's better to find someone who can excel at that and do that really well than try to make it fit for someone who's like not really great at that, or who that style doesn't really come naturally. So I don't know. We just make it work, I guess.
I got the sense reading something about you that it was really in the last, you know, few years or several years that you really kind of took it to the next level, this band, as far as this being like your thing that you do.
Sure. I mean, I think it was definitely in the past few years that I just became more comfortable with it being the fact that like I am the songwriter of the band, that it's my project, you know, that I could make that more obvious and apparent in it. Because I don't, for a long time, like I really don't necessarily like my face on things. I don't, it's not, that's not the point. Like I'm not, I don't like, you know, necessarily being the center of attention, even though I am the lead singer in the band. I don't think it was until the past few years that I made it about my songwriting and less about what the other people I'm collaborating with necessarily wanted, or you know, what people expected of a quote unquote band, or like what we had sounded like in the past. So yeah, I think that's correct.
What does it mean beyond, again, obviously being the songwriter and the lead singer, what does it mean to center yourself?
I mean, I think you can talk about a band for, you know, everyone who's in it. I think you can talk about a band as this kind of nebulous creative energy, this entity that I just think there's a different language around bands than there is when you talk about a person and their story and their trajectory, like across, you know, many different projects or something. You know, I just think there's a different way of talking about it. And I think, you know, coming up in the scene that I did, there wasn't a lot of like, it was kind of not looked down upon, but you know, it wasn't always a done thing to have it be like a solo project. So, I think it took me a while to be more comfortable with that, even though that's what it was for many years. But I think talking about it that way was more comfortable for me.
You're talking about punk?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Such a fascinating topic for me. I'm from the Bay Area originally. Oh, you know, cool. I used to go to Gilman Street, and it's really interesting now having conversations, especially with like people who are quite a bit younger than me, about all of these now in hindsight seemingly to a certain extent arbitrary rules that we lived our lives by, and all of that's just kind of out the window now.
Yeah, it's very out the window. And I mean, there's certainly still values and ethics that I stand by, but, you know, there's certainly a lot that was prescribed that I realize doesn't really make a difference. So,
I purely hypothetically, you know, if we talk about like licensing music or something, like you're probably not going to be in an Exxon commercial, like, you know, but the mere idea of licensing music now is not, it doesn't have the same kind of, I guess I would say that people are just happy that musicians can find a way to actually make a living doing music.
I think that is the thing. It's like, once you get over the hump of it being something that you are being compensated for, I think that a lot of people now realize how hard it is to just exist under capitalism, just as anybody, let alone a musician or an artist. So it's like, hey, if you can find a way to do this and not necessarily be supporting horrible companies, you know, if you can stay true to yourself a little bit, you're better than a lot of people, or you're doing better than a lot. So, yeah.
I mean, in addition to the kind of, I guess, a punk ethos being an issue, centering yourself early on, it seemed to me you kind of alluded to a bit of maybe insecurity you had about yourself as a songwriter in the early days.
I don't necessarily think that I was insecure about myself as a songwriter, but I think I was very happy to collaborate with people and make it more of a group effort and not try to act like I knew everything already. I think it took me a long time to figure out songwriting for myself, you know? So yeah, I think it was just a different approach.
It wasn't about being deferential necessarily.
Not entirely, because I think for most of the time that Warriors has been a band, it has been like, you know, I have the final say with things. Like, it is at the end of the day my music, but I think I I don't even know how to put it necessarily, because it's not that I can look back on things and think like, oh, like, I didn't actually really like this part, or like, we shouldn't have been playing this way. But I think I was just thinking more about it as a band and a much more collaborative effort than maybe I do now. Or I think the people that I have been making music with are people that are very confident in what they do, but are also very supportive of what I'm trying to get at. And it's really nice to be in a room with people who, you know, just want to serve the music and serve the song and figure out what it is that I'm trying to go for. And you know, we all try to move towards that. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's hard to verbalize.
Not to put words in your mouth, maybe what you're getting at is walking that line, and I'm sure it can be really difficult. I don't, when I do creative things, it's a little less collaboration, but walking the line between trusting yourself, but also recognizing, like, there's a reason why this is the person that I chose for this, because I very much trust them to make the music.
Yes. Yeah, 100%.
The things you learned over the years as a songwriter, you know, what kinds of things do you know now that you didn't then?
Oh, I mean, I think it comes from a lot of just taking apart my favorite songs, you know, like playing a lot of covers, learning, like spending a lot of time in the studio, learning why certain songs sound the way they do. In a way that if you're not making music, why would you think about that? You know, like, why would you think about like levels of compression on vocals, or how things are layered, or how certain things are EQ'd, and how the bass cuts through more in certain, it's like really nerdy stuff that I think earlier on, it felt like the only people who really cared about that were people who were just trying to gatekeep, or trying to be like very like overly invested in gear. So I think it just takes a while. It takes experience. It takes playing music for a long time and figuring out what you like and why you like it. That I definitely learned a lot, and I had a lot more time to sit and make music by myself at home over the past few years, for obvious reasons. That like when it was kind of forced on me that I didn't live anywhere near any of my bandmates. We couldn't get in a room together. That wasn't possible. So I had to, at a certain point, just try to build songs on my own, like without having somebody on other instruments. And I sent stuff back and forth. Like that's definitely how the newest record started, was sending demos back and forth. So, but it was definitely my having to sit there and figure out, like, oh, I'm writing this bass line start to finish, you know, like I'm layering vocals here because what else am I doing? Like I can't wait to be in the studio. It's not going to happen. So yeah, there was definitely a lot of that. That I think a lot of people now, if you're just starting out playing music and you have all these tools at your disposal, of course that's where you're probably starting. But that's just not where my mind has been for a long time.
So is it fair to say that part of this idea of centering yourself came out of necessity of having to be the main driver?
I think definitely, yeah, for sure. They didn't have to drag me kicking and screaming, but it was definitely like, okay, well, I guess this is happening now because it just kind of has to.
The pandemic had that effect on people in a lot of different ways. You know, for me, it was like, well, I guess I can't not go to therapy anymore. You know, it was something of just like being stuck at home and just having to like,
yeah,
live with yourself, which
yeah,
is kind of miserable, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it was definitely like, okay, well, if I can't, you know, hang out with my friends and make music all the time, what's the music that I want to be making? What does it sound like? Like, what am I actually having fun with? Because at the end of the day, then I was like, that's all that matters. I just got to be really stoked on what I'm making. So,
is that something that you, I mean, it seems obvious, but is that something that you had to learn, that was what you need to focus on?
I mean, I think I thought for a long time that there were certain types of music or certain types of songs that were like in the Warrior's wheelhouse, that I could write music that was for other people. And I still do want to write music that maybe other people play, but I think I did need to learn that, oh, like, no, I can pull this off. Like if I'm going to write music that doesn't necessarily sound like an indie punk band, that's fine. Like no one's going to freak out. It's fine. Just make the stuff that I think is really fun. And
well, that's kind of what I'm getting at is, you know, it's not just like playing the music and being open to play other things and not worrying about what people think about it, but centering having fun playing music. Not everybody has fun playing music, and a lot of great music is not particularly fun.
Right. Yeah. Fair. Yeah. And I mean, it's like I wouldn't necessarily call all of our songs quote unquote fun, but I do really enjoy playing them and want to have that sort of joy in making music, even if it doesn't always sound like, you know, a bouncy pop song all the time.
This is crass, but anytime you talk about like money and making a living doing something, it is. But like at the end of the day, if this isn't something that, you know, is making you a fortune, then I mean, that's enjoyment is as good a motivation as any.
Sure. I mean, I think it's less that, I mean, but I do still rely on it to exist though. Like
you're not doing this because it's making you a ton of money. You could
right,
do
no,
something
else. Yeah. It's not like, oh, I hit the jackpot
yeah,
on some viral
bracket
song. And so
yeah,
then like people know me for that. So I have to keep doing that. No, that's true. And I'm kind of glad that has not happened.
The cover song is interesting because, you know, obviously a lot of bands, like that's how they start, right? Whether it's playing direct covers or it's just being like so influenced by other artists that it's hard to shake it. But that, does that continue to be a part of your process, like a dozen or so years in?
Sure. I mean, I like, you know, just messing around and playing cover songs, even if it's just at home. I mean, in 2021, we put out a covers EP that was all the covers we had had to record for basically for live streams. And yeah, that stuff's still really fun. Like, I think, like, especially when we go on tour, throwing in a cover is always something I like to do. I think people really respond to it because it's also, like, I don't necessarily always cover the most obvious songs that you would think we would cover. So then you kind of learn something about the band you like or something. It's like, oh, they actually all really love this band that I wouldn't have thought, you know. So that's been really fun.
What are some of the more left field examples?
I mean, the one I always think of is that, like, we've covered Fleetwood Mac.
But everybody loves Fleetwood
Mac. Yeah, everybody loves Fleetwood Mac, but I, like...
water.
We did a... and maybe this was, like, before a lot of younger people were really talking about Fleetwood Mac all the time.
Well, I talk about viral sensations. There was that dude on the skateboard with the cranberry juice that, like, blew that song.
Yeah, but see, this is the thing. I think it was before that... we did a Fleetwood Mac cover set at Fest, and I just thought it would be funny, you know. And I thought, I was like, oh, our friends would like this, you know. This would be amusing.
The contrast of it all,
yeah. Or just like, you know, I'm sure we all grew up with our parents listening to Fleetwood Mac in some way. It's like, you know, some of the songs. So I just thought it'd be fun, and people just lost their minds. Like, it was just such a strong reaction I think, yeah, it was just surprising to me at that point. I was like, oh, okay, I guess we all like Fleetwood Mac. I didn't realize. And but it wasn't something that I expect, like, that I think you would have known about me or my bandmates necessarily beforehand.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things. It's like yacht rock, you know, where, like, for a long time people were very secretive. But it's like, yeah, of course everybody likes this. This is music for everybody.
Sure. Yeah.
So did you... how much of the... not new. How much of the latest record did you actually record at home?
The latest record, none of it. Yeah, none of it. Warm Blanket, I recorded all myself at home, except for drums that Adam recorded separately in a studio. But Trust Your Gut, it was 100% in a studio. I had nothing to do with tracking any of that. Yeah.
Is there a sense in which that was kind of a reaction to the last album of having to do it all yourself?
Not in the way you might think. I think from learning a lot through doing a lot of recording myself, I think I had a better understanding of the value of going to a studio, working with specific people in specific studios, or just, you know, relying on people who had better tools than I do to make it happen. So I think I knew that if it was going to sound how I wanted it to sound, that other people needed to be involved, and that's fine.
Would you ever repeat that earlier experience if it wasn't out of necessity?
I certainly continue to record at home, but I think I would probably, even though the feedback about Warm Blanket has not been like, oh, this sounds like shitty home demos, I think I would probably frame it more as demos or at home recording, because I like being able to have fun with stuff that way and not have it be 100% polished. So I like giving myself that freedom to kind of mess around. And it's like, okay, this is going to sound kind of lo-fi, but also fine. But just not to be precious with it.
For like a decade, we've been talking about this idea of the internet opening up, you know, distribution and not having to go through like record labels and all that stuff. And certainly there are plenty of bands that do take advantage of it. But I'm surprised that over the last, I guess, 4 years now, after doing home recording and that after doing these live home performances, that more bands aren't continuing to do that, you know, and just in terms of like, obviously we grew up at a time when proper records were important. So that's still important to you, but there is this immediacy and there is this outreach that you can tap into by doing things that way.
Sure. No, I mean, I think, it still has changed the way that I make music and think about, recording and releasing songs. I think probably moving forward, I'll probably end up doing more short form work, just in terms of not necessarily always having it be a full album. But yeah, there is that immediacy and having some more tools at my disposal now. It's been really fun to figure out what I want that to look like. And or even just like we recorded a song for this comp that it was vinyl only, and technically like the song isn't released anywhere else, but I had the tools to do that. Like we tracked all of that on our own, and then I had I think it was Jack Shirley mixed it, and you know, that was just something that we could do in a week, you know, or like over a few days, everybody goes to a studio, records their stuff. And then we have a song that we can put out. And I think that projects like that are really fun. I'd like to do more of that.
One thing I think about all the time, because, you know, I was doing this show for a couple of years before the pandemic started, but you know, since the pandemic started, and I guess is, you know, still very much going on. I got COVID 2 weeks ago for the fourth time. I don't know that I've had maybe one or two conversations on this podcast that where COVID hasn't like come up in some way or another, you know, obviously part of the creative process and just our emotional states and the way we live our lives. But I'm wondering if like, I don't know, do we ever get to a point where, to a certain extent, the trauma of the last 4 years doesn't inform everything we do?
I think that I would like to be able to frame it as having learned what can be taken away really quickly. And that...
Not taking things for granted.
Yeah, just being able to make decisions based on like, you know what, I could not have this opportunity tomorrow. Like we're doing a couple tours this spring that, you know, are not the easiest to just get up and do. But it's very much like, I have no idea what's going to happen. Like you just have, like, if this sounds fun and exciting, then we should be doing it. And you know, when projects or opportunities are thrown my way at this point, it's very much like, well, do I actually want to do that? You know, like, is that really how I want to be spending my time? And if it's not, then I don't. And it's not, and I don't think of that as having experienced trauma that's like in a bad way. It's like, oh, okay, I've learned that, like how to prioritize things, I guess.
I mean, that's a very pragmatic answer to the question. But, you know, you I'm sure, experienced trauma to a certain extent, like all of us did. It was a really hard few years. Not that things were particularly good prior to that, but not to say, obviously, for reasons we've discussed, this isn't like your pandemic album, but like subject matter, it seems to still continue to inform the songs you write?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that the things I was thinking about politically before the pandemic are things that that are maybe more obvious to people now, and that I just have continued to be outspoken about. Because that's the thing. I don't think that what I have addressed in the record is actually like all that different than things I've talked about before. But yeah, certainly the past few years have informed a lot of my outlook on things.
I was talking to our mutual friend Caroline before this, and you know, I was like double checking that you're non-binary. Obviously, like want this information before you
sure,
know.
Yeah.
You know, just to respect people's identities. But one of the things I said to her was my weekend project is going to be going. We've got like 630 some odd episodes. Is going through and like updating all the names and the pronouns, because something that I realized recently, like doing some back end stuff for the podcast, is how many people since the show started like 10 plus years ago have transitioned. It's incredible. Like just the sheer number. And I think, it's interesting, but also like not entirely unexpected when you do a show where you interview creative people that like,
yeah, well, especially if you have like 600 episodes, you know, it's like there's going to be a solid percent that like maybe you may have.
I'm sure there are 600 episodes of a lot of podcasts where that isn't the case. But right, if you're talking to like musicians and writers and people who are generally like left of center, then that makes a lot of sense. Is that something like I know that is a subject that you do tackle in your music, obviously, because you know it's a big part of your life and your identity. But is that something that's come more to the front for you in recent years?
I feel like this is a boring answer, but no.
Okay, no, it's a fine answer, right?
No, I mean, I think that's the thing. It's like it's so almost like. Not a non-entity, but just like I feel like it's so much a part of me and my perspective that I write from my perspective, but I don't necessarily point that out necessarily. And I think that I think anyone's experience with gender can kind of identify with a lot of what I end up singing about in that regard, you know, like it's sometimes more obvious than others that I'm talking about, you know, my specific relationship with gender or androgyny in general. But yeah, I think it's like I forget sometimes. It's like I don't think about it as much as you would think. But yeah,
this is gonna sound real rich coming from me, you know. But that there is a privilege in that, in not having to think about that all the time.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, I say that also like living in Los Angeles, and like. When I travel, I'm often with people who, you know, are obviously on the same page as me and, you know, whatever. But, no, certainly there's a ton of privilege there. And that's not to say that I'm not like conscious of, my gender when I'm out in public. But I think when I'm making art, it doesn't, it's less about me and maybe more about the politics surrounding it, or like what else is happening in the world. So, yeah.
I mean, that's what I was getting at. And that's why there was that very awkward transition between the pandemic to this subject. I asked because obviously, like, listen, there's never been a point in American, certainly American history, where it's been like easy to be, you know, consider yourself on the LGBT spectrum. But like, I don't know how much of a role the kind of the pandemic played in this to a certain extent, just because of, you know, that it brought out the extremes in everybody. But like, man, it's like this, that's the battlefield right now.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like masks and that, you know, I mean,
which is, you know, insane. And
thank God, like, DeSantis isn't running for president. You know, obviously the alternatives aren't great, but like, he made his career with that shit.
Yeah. Well, and it's just, and I think that's the thing. And what is so frustrating is that, you know, I've been queer and I identified as such for the majority of my life and have had various, you know, political experiences with that of like acceptance or not, and seeing the you know, political climate regarding that change over time. In general, it was getting better for a long time. And now there's this backlash that's just like, what is even, what? I just don't, I mean, I know where it comes from, but it's so disappointing and frustrating because of all the work that's gone into creating safer spaces and creating acceptance and awareness and, like, especially for kids, you know, that the fact that now people are obsessing over things that, like, I thought maybe we were past that. And it's just, it's weird. People need to get a life, like, leave people alone. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just so, it's so strange to me, and upsetting. So, yeah, I don't know.
Phrasing it that way, that these were things that we had gotten past, you know, I thought that, obviously not entirely, but that we had done took a long time, but a relatively good job of, you know, having more representation, you know, and like, and
sure,
and making things like slightly better for people of color. And the Trump presidency during it and since then, I continue to kind of ask myself how much of that sentiment is because things were moving in that direction and now there's a backlash and things are regressing, and how much of it is just me again being in my very very privileged position and just not seeing a lot of that stuff happen.
Sure. I mean, I think that's the thing. It's like everybody's in their own little bubble. So you're going to think it's like fine. And that's what I mean. Like, I, you know, I live in a major metropolitan area. My perspective on, you know, anything really is very colored by like what I'm seeing on a day-to-day basis. And you just have to be conscious of the fact that like, not everybody has it that easy. Not everybody can walk down the street, you know, safely all the time. And I think that, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you just have to be aware of that privilege at a certain point. And yeah, it's just, it's very frustrating and sad when you see people, like actively try to turn back the clock, you know, and it's just, it's not helping anybody. So
it's hard. The sense that these battles have to be fought all over again and that you can't focus on the next thing is extremely frustrating.
Sure. Yeah. No, totally.
Are you back in LA? Is that what you said?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When did that happen?
I moved out to LA, about 5 years ago.
Okay.
So I've been, so you were
in LA. Well, you were in Brooklyn at one point. You're in LA. You moved to Philly and then moved back to LA.
No, I lived in Brooklyn for a long time. I briefly moved to Philadelphia and then I moved to Los Angeles.
Okay, got it.
So yeah,
got it. Yeah, that makes more sense. Yeah. No, I like. Listen, I live in New York and I love Philly, but that makes more sense to me. I'm saying this as somebody who's from San Francisco.
Oh, cool. Well, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
So, what brought you out to the West Coast?
I just really liked it. No, I mean, I have not been tied to a city for a job in a long time. And the band got to a point where we were really just touring. Like, we could never really play local shows. So there was no point in my necessarily staying right where my bandmates were, because we weren't really playing local shows anyway. So I decided to go where it was nice and sunny all the time, and where I had some cool friends, and yeah, it was just a better fit for me out here, I think. So
I've seen you allude to this in conversations before. Again, I'm from the Bay Area, so it's very similar, but San Francisco is different in that it's Silicon Valley, and that, you know, there's this thing of, you know, walking down Market Street and walking past like the Twitter headquarters, and then like it's right by the Tenderloin, and you know, people are shitting on the street out there, and it's always been, you know, unhoused people. That's always been something that the city has had to grapple with, but it's gotten so hard lately, and that certainly applies to LA. You know, I haven't been there in a few years, but last time I was there, I had to do something in the arts district and drove through Skid Row, and it's like an entire city out there. And it's really, mentally, it's really hard to reconcile those things of just like, the good lives that people are living in Los Angeles, and then the number of people who are like struggling to get by.
Sure. I mean, but I think it's the same situation in most places in the country, to be honest.
Well, the West Coast in particular, though, because I was in Vancouver a couple months ago, and Vancouver, that crisis is possibly like worse than
LA. Well, but I think that's the thing, it just shows itself in different ways.
I'm just getting at that the weather is really nice there, so people don't want to spend the winter in Toronto if they can't live inside.
No, for sure. Yeah, so it definitely happens a lot more in Southern California, for sure, because it's just a lot easier to exist if you don't have a lot of resources, so which is sad. So,
yeah, put a damper on how nice it is living in Los Angeles. Is there any, you know, you said that your job doesn't tie you to a place, but in 2024, are there any benefits? Obviously, LA's an industry town for movies and film, but I mean also traditionally music too. Are there benefits on the music front?
Oh, sure.
In terms of living in LA?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I have lots of friends out here who are involved in music in a ton of different ways that aren't just being in a band, that aren't just being a songwriter, which I think is something that I hadn't experienced before. So it is really cool. It's just such a creative city, that, you know, no matter what you're interested in, or, you know, what your art form is, there's a place for it here. So that definitely made me feel better in moving out here, that I was like, well, whatever happens, there's always going to be something there that I want to be a part of. So, yeah.
It strikes me that you're this sort of newfound focus, this newfound centering, is really paying off in a big way. I mean, I'm looking at your tours and I'm looking at the people that you're playing with, and it seems like things are really coming together over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I can't complain. I think that's the thing. It's like, I just, leaning into certain things and just following where I really wanted to go, I think has let us do some really fun things and had some really great opportunities come up. So I mean, the tours this spring are the best, and it's just a really nice place to be for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like a big secret to your recent success is just like getting popular bands really into your band.
I mean, it doesn't hurt to just be nice to people, you know, just to like be friends with people. And it's not like a pulling strings or, you know, trying to like rub elbows with people. It's literally just like the people that we're touring with are people that I've known for a long time at this point. And it just happens that our paths can cross in a fun way right now. So, yeah, I'm really psyched that kind of stuff can pay off down the line.
Any headlining tours in the future?
Not for a while, probably not for a while, but because we just did like 2 months of that, so I'm a little headlined out. But we'll see, maybe later this year. It'll be fine. Think it's too good to be true. Well,